Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Alrighty, welcome to the Celtics Lab podcast. I am your host, Cameron Teptibai, joined by Dr. Justin Quinn. Alex is on the shelf. He is under the weather, but our intro music from Divine Sweater, Alex plays bass for that band. They have new music, so go check it out. In a few moments, Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston is going to join us, and he's going to talk to us about postseason rotations, regular season rotations, and really what's going on with Boston's depth chart. Between now and then, Justin, you and I are going to talk about the news, and the news is grim, so let's just do a temperature check. Where are you at with the Celtics?
Happy that I missed yesterday's game to spend some time with my wife on her birthday.
Yeah, that's.
I'm so sorry.
That seems pleasant. I'm sure people who are listening are aware Boston's dropped the past three games. They've coughed up double-digit leads in all three of those games, including 28 points for the Nets. Three overtimes in two nights is a lot. It's just been a slog. It seems like it's been very ugly, although I would hazard that if you peel the onion a little bit, it's not as bad as all that. One thing that's been bothering me about overreaction theater is we spend so much time at the beginning of the season saying, this is not statistically significant. We are not seeing trends that we can back up with data. Let's wait. And we're finally at a point in the season where we have good data on these teams, where we've seen a long runway of what they look like when they're healthy, when they're not, when they play like this, when they play like that. And now we're just honing in on these three games. And granted, they're so dramatic, these three games, that they are impressively disappointing. But they're not statistically significant. They don't rely.
I disagree. Because if you go back to the beginning of last season and beyond, we saw a very similar style of play, right? The ongoing debate about Mozilla Ball, and we can talk about this a little bit more later, is that there's more than one kind of it. There's the functional kind and the good kind. And we've been seeing the functional kind combined with that style of play that devolves into ISO ball that is impatient, unorganized, scrambling. It's a very similar pattern we've seen over and over again. So that's why people are freaking out. I agree with you that in the recent time period that we're speaking about, we have seen that they know how to get out of it. The concerning part for me, and it's not that big of a concern, it's not the sky is falling like some people, but the concern for me is that it keeps happening. If it stops happening from here on out, or maybe only happens one more time this season, I think it's not going to be so concerning. But the problem is that it keeps happening, and they should and do know how to make it stop.
Yeah, I guess for me, I was talking about this with Jack Simone of Celtics Blog, is, you know, at least for someone my age, we went from the big three Celtics era where they could do no wrong to the Heatles, to the Warriors, that our expectation for greatness as Celtics fans is wrong. The teams aren't supposed to be generationally good. They're supposed to be very good. And the Celtics team is as good as any other team in the league right now. There's no great, great, great team. Watching the Bucks, watching the Nuggets, watching the Warriors, watching the Suns, they're incredibly flawed. They've all had mega bed pooping incidences, to frame it one way. And so, I don't know, there's an element here where I just don't think that the expectations on the Celtics are reasonable. I agree that the trend line for they shoot too many threes and don't know what to do with that is consistent. I don't think it's coming to a head in this moment. I think on the back half of a back-to-back where three starters are out, that they even went to overtime against Cleveland is pretty impressive. And the Knicks are interesting because without Jalen Brunson, they become a defensive beast. And if Quickley is going to have the game of his life, sometimes you got to just tip your cap. So I don't know. I where I'm at with the Celtics right now is that I feel very happy that they're getting healthy before the postseason, that they're ironing through some kinks before the postseason. And I feel bad that they're taking their lumps, but I'd rather they take them now than they take them in April and May. So yeah. That's kind of where the news is at. Do you want to talk about the Grant Williams free throws at all?
Let's just say that Grant should accomplish more personally, not as a team, but personally before he smack talks. I've heard people say, well, what was he supposed to say? You're supposed to say nothing and make the shots. That's all I have to say. It's unfortunate it happened to him, but in the grand scheme of things, no one's going to remember this in 2 weeks if he plays well.
Which he did play well. He was 4 for 5 from three. The team's not in a position to win the game if he's not there to get the rebound to get fouled. I know you didn't watch. If you watched this game, this was a man holding back tears for 20 minutes in public, because after those free throws, he looked haunted. And
of course, of course. I mean, he was basically in an impossible situation. He reacted like probably I would have, many of us would have, particularly with someone, you know, talking smack very, very publicly. I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think the whole Grant referendum that's been going on is particularly helpful to the Celtics. They can't do anything about his situation. The only thing they can do is play the games that are in front of him. And this Celtics team is very, very less likely to win a championship if he isn't playing well. So we want him to play better. We want him to hopefully earn a better contract than he's probably looking at, like they're betting on himself and then playing like this. Whatever's going on with him, you know, it's not the first time he's had, you know, like a mental block that's affecting his performance on the court. I mean, he started that way with three pointers. So at least for me personally, the referendum on Grant is that he has shown us that he's a very good player who's a valuable member of a team in the past, and I expect him to be in the future. Once whatever is going on, whether it's in his head, his body, a combination of thereof, once that's over, I think that people will recalibrate their understanding of how valuable he is as a player, in the same sort of a way that it will recalibrate what he will be looking at in terms of earning in his next deal, which is my theory on what's going on in his head right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he so clearly has the yips. And I think that's the biggest concern for me with the Celtics, is they're still younger. And I think last year that they got spooked, and that's why they lost. And so I do worry that the moment could still be too big for them. That's kind of my concern with Missoula Ball, is you have to have real stones to execute it. And that doing it, I often say to my students, don't do this half-assed, use your whole ass. And if you do it half-ass, then it just looks like you're launching threes because the shot clock is winding down, and that you're not seeking out the better three.
Or you're just shooting it in the beginning of the shot clock and you never get it back again. And you run the other way because, you know, the other team's going to transition, like lots of teams are, and it's really burning them.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that I think it's easy to say Missoula Ball works when the shots fall, and it doesn't work when the shots don't fall. I think a more nuanced point of view is when they find the right shots. Anyways, we're going to welcome Chris Forsberg into the action to, I guess, talk about this, but more importantly, talk about postseason rotations and the end of the season rotations. But first, let me talk to you about our friends over at betonline.ag, your number one source for all your sports betting this season, with everything from pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, NHL, and more. At betonline.ag, you'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends. And with live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite leagues and events. So head on over to the website or use your mobile device today to join and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just make sure to use our promo code CLNS50 to receive that reward. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. All righty, Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston, come on down. All righty, as promised, Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston is here through the magic of editing. He just arrived onto your screen or into your ears.
Just dropped in.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for coming on, and how are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry that you lined up this podcast. I always feel bad when I jump on in the midst of like the most depressing 96 hours in Celtics history, but we will persevere through it and find some positive spins.
Okay, well, I was going to ask for your temperature take on the room, but I think I know your answer. Can you give us 90 seconds on where the Celtics are at?
Yeah, so I'll admit, like, even before this little stretch, I was a little worried. I think you just look at, I mean, the date I keep going back to is December 10th and the Golden State game, and sort of the offense not falling off a cliff, but just being middle of the road, like however you want to describe it. And so I've had some concerns. You know, they were really good at the start of the year. The vibes were probably a little too good in that stretch, and you knew they were going to come back to earth a little bit. The problem is now, as you come out of the All-Star break and Tatum slumps a little bit and the defense erodes a little bit, I'm not, you know, after games I might seem full-blown 10 on the panic meter, but, you know, I'm a prisoner of the moment. And I just think there's some stuff for this team to work on. As everybody, I guess the thing I go back to is, like, last year I felt really good about this team because of the way they closed out the second half. And right now, there's a lot to still figure out. And so it's okay if we're just like, I don't know how this is going to go the last 16 and into the playoffs, but I know it's in them to still get to where they want to go.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. I mean, they went to the finals last year. They get a little bit more slack, I think. Speaking of the final 16 games, Mazzulla has kind of admitted he's still tinkering with the rotation. And, you know, this team's really deep, so it's not clear who plays when. Which is why, Chris, we were hoping to pick your brain about all of that stuff.
Perfect.
And I guess we kind of have to diagnose the problem before we really jump in. So you teased it a little bit, but Justin, I'll fold you into this as well. I think it's worth wondering what these struggles are all about, whether it's, you know, the opponents that they're playing, whether they're playing too much, the Celtics are playing too much, if the rotations are just flat out incorrect, if it's Mazzulla ball or something else. So, Chris, I'll go to you first. If you had to diagnose the problem, what do you think is the chief or top two concerns?
So I would think, you know, and some of it is, maybe I'm just looking too much at the post All-Star numbers and focusing on that. But like, one, the competition has been very good. I think you do need to start there, that, hey, this is like playoff caliber teams. And yet Celtics have usually played their best basketball against playoff caliber teams. And, you know, the Nets notwithstanding, they should have performed better against New York. And it was a little disappointing to let that one get away. I thought that was the most disappointing of the bunch, just because, you know, that one mattered and you were coming off the disappointment against the Nets. But when I look at it, I think two things headline it. Marcus Smart hasn't been himself since coming back from injury. And the, you know, assist rate is way down. I think it was at 28.8 for the first half of the season, now down to like 17.8. And so sometimes I think Marcus just needs to remember when he's his best version of himself. And I think that goes for a lot of guys, but, you know, just especially when your offense is middling and you need to kind of find that groove again. And so, not to put too much of it on Marcus, because I don't think it's all on him, but sometimes he needs to be the guy that kind of reels everybody in and gets this thing going and makes life easier for everybody. So I need him to sort of find that old Marcus mojo. And then let's just face it. Like, Tatum, I think, is minus 43 for the post All-Star break. Tatum is never in the negative. And to see him be in the negative for a 275-minute span is jarring. And so, you know, that's why whenever we freak out about this stuff, I say, we're one Tatum hot streak away from everything being, you know, we're getting the duck boats ready again, because that's just how it goes. When your superstar is playing at a superstar level, it looks great. And so that's oversimplifying everything. The defense needs to be better. There's all like a whole bunch of million different little things I can focus on. We'll get into the rotation stuff. I have no clue what the bench rotation is right now. And so that would be nice to be smoothed out over the final 16 games. And I don't know how much we're going to learn, though, because of injuries, because of resting guys on second nights of back-to-back. So another long-winded way of saying there's a lot of things at play, but a lot of it can be alleviated if some of your best players just get back to playing the way we know they can play.
Sure. Dr. Quinn, not that kind of doctor, but give us your prognosis.
My prognosis is, if they can play the good version of Mazzulla ball, I alluded to earlier in the podcast how there are two versions, the version where they just whip it around the perimeter and not much really happens besides that on offense, or the version where they, you know, get into the paint, get paint touches, attack the rim, and then move the ball around that way and kick out to open shooters. I think Tom Westerholm mentioned this on Twitter the other day, where he differentiated between taking a lot of threes and generating threes. And I think the latter type of ball play, because they aren't doing that and because we know they can, we've been freaking out. But I'm pretty confident that if they choose to, unless there's some strange mental block going on, that they can play that way. So I'm not super worried yet. as long as we keep seeing them return to this Mozilla ball, you know, slumps, whether it's the team slumping or brand slumping, it's going to happen, right? So the question is, how do they respond? And I think we are getting close to the real panic zone if this can keep continuing.
Yeah, Chris, the point that you raised about Smart is, it's almost like a third rail at this point, but Derek White was a more effective complementary piece to the starters when Smart was out than Smart is being right now. I don't know that there's like the political will to make that change, but I am curious about that one. I'd also hazard that the defense isn't as good. And last season, the Celtics only went to the finals because of their defense. The offense got hot at times, but it was functionally mediocre for a good team. It was nothing to write home about. I mean, maybe Tatum got hot now and again, but it was the defense again and again and again. And the defense has not inspired in the same way. I think kind of on an individual basis, sometimes it's a little too switch heavy. Sometimes I think that they almost functionally double team because they switch too much. But I also just feel like I'm seeing a lot of guys, Jaylen Brown in particular, getting blown by. And I don't know that that's a fixed thing. Maybe you lock in for the postseason, but I am worried that when push is coming to shove, the defense is kind of laying down. So on that happy note.
But I'm with you. And I don't know what there is no simple answer, right? Like, I think it's dangerous when your solution, and rightfully so, is just when the games matter the most, the team will figure it out and they'll just ratchet it up a little bit. And that could happen. I keep going back to it. Some of their best basketball is coming against their best opponents. And so this team clearly, and once you've been there, there's always sort of this, all right, you know, and I don't want to say pacing yourself, because this certainly isn't pacing. It's just, you know, when you kind of have to throw it up a level. And if you eliminate a bad possession from each of these three games, do you win all of them? Maybe, you know, like probably not in that Nets game, but in the other two, if, you know, a lot of things could variance and get you to the finish line. So, but ultimately I'm with you, is that my biggest concern throughout all of this is, even when they were winning ugly, it sort of masked some bigger issues. And to me, the defense is chief among them. It's weird. Like, when Mazzulla got hired, I kept asking guys about him. They're like, oh, you know, Derek White says, when I first got here last year, they sent me to Joe Mazzulla and said, you know, he'll tell you everything about what you need to know about this defense. And yet, Mazzulla ball has been just built around offense and chucking threes and Joe's love of analytics and all that. And so I keep wondering when we're going to start focusing a little bit on getting back to what was the identity of the team that got to the finals, and what is the root of that issue? And does it come down to just everyone has to be a little bit better? But, you know, I thought I was telling, for Celtics post up tonight, we were looking at, you know, the holding it on defense for a little bit. And I went back and looked, and for Raptor, which is, you know, like all these metrics have various, you know, flaws in them, but just wanted to see, like, in the defensive Raptor, like, how did the Celtics perform last year? And they had three guys in the top 20, Derek White, Al Horford, and Robert Williams. And so, you know, and Marcus Smart isn't even in there because as usual, like, numbers can't always quantify like how good Smart is, but he was still, like, you know, right on the edge of top 50. This year they have one in the top 50. So not even like, not only do they lose, you know, three others in the top 50, but, like, you know, essentially Derek White is the only guy in there. And I think if we were going to pick a guy who's been anywhere near all defense level, it's been Derek White, blocking shots and just doing all the Derek White stuff. Does everyone else just need to sort of pick it up a little bit more? Or is there a larger root issue of why this defense has not been as crisp? And it's weird to say, because they're fourth in the NBA overall, even with this last 2 weeks being completely suckfest on the defensive end. And yet, I just feel like they have to figure out how to dial that in, because you have to be able to lean on something in the playoffs. And I don't think you can, if you're just leaning on making 3-point shots, that's way more dangerous.
Yeah, for a little bit, we flirted with, like, oh, is Tatum going to be all defense? And that kind of went away. Smart, I don't think, is 100%. I mean, Smart just has taken such a beating as of late. Of course, he's not 100%. Maybe Al has lost 10% of a step, and maybe Rob Williams is still getting right. And so death by 1,000 paper cuts on the defensive end. I don't really know. But to your point, yeah, the analytics say it's good enough, but the eye test, I think, disagrees. Let's pivot a little bit and kind of dial into this rotation business. And rather than construct a rotation, which is not really a great, you know, challenge for a podcast, we'll just kind of talk about who's playing enough and who's not playing enough. So let's start at the top. Forsberg, and then I'll go to you, Justin. Is Jason Tatum playing too much, too little, or just the right amount of, I guess this is the Goldilocks game now, just the right amount of minutes?
So I know we've spent most of the year saying he's playing too much. I guess when he's not on the floor, I think I always sit there and say, man, I really wish Jason Tatum was out there, you know, especially nights like Cleveland. So as long as he is comfortable with the minutes that he's playing and believes it is sustainable and not going to impact him deeper into the playoffs, then I'm kind of okay with it. I would like Joe to sometimes be the adult in the room that says, like, okay, you know, we don't need to chase 40 points tonight. Let's get you out of there with 5 minutes to go in the fourth instead of a minute 58 or whatever it was a couple of weeks ago. You know, but Joe is a player's coach and definitely trying to help his guys in that regard. So I would say it's teetering on too much. And yet, like, I start looking now and it's going to be a race over the final 16 games to either stay where you are at the two seed or whatever. So I'm not sure there's going to be any change in what Jason Tatum is playing.
Okay. Dr. Quinn?
I kind of agree. If Tatum takes a couple of games, there's at least three or four games where the Celtics should be able to win, whether he plays or not. If he sits at least one or two of those games, I think he gets a little bit more rest in before the end of the season. I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be playing as much as he's comfortable as well.
Yeah, but I think I'm more worried about his wrist than I'm supposed to be, because no one else seems worried about his wrist. So I'm happy with his minutes, but if, you know, they get bounced early and we find out that he has wrist surgery over the summer, I don't think I'd be so shocked. But please, no one run with that. That's kind of my personal perspective. Okay, Jaylen Brown, Chris, too much, too little, or just right?
I think I'm going to go just right. You know, same deal. Like, I don't love 135 minutes over the last three games when you go 0-3, and that's less than ideal. It was hard watching him go 48 against the Knicks and then having to play whatever it ended up being. What was it, 46 last night, 41?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so but this is the predicament you put yourself in by, like, losing some of these games. So I think in general, I'm okay with Jaylen's minutes. You know, unfortunately, the confluence of this week is probably made it so that if they can buy him a day off here, and I'm not really sure where, Houston, I don't know, then that would be nice just to make sure he's okay.
Yeah, he got clocked. I can't believe he's playing with a broken face just because some of these games are so physical. Dr. Quinn?
Only thing I would add to that, if there's even the tiniest hint of tendinopathy or hamstring issues, get some rest.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way that I don't know why, but I feel like Jaylen does need a day or two to just, like, reset his body. But clearly, that's not the case. Okay, we won't do all the players, but let's keep it with the starters, anyways. Al Horford, too many minutes, not enough minutes, or just right? And I think it's worth pausing and saying, however tough this stretch has been, it could have been worse, because Al Horford has saved their asses a few times over the past few weeks.
It's so true. And it's funny you said, because, like, unfortunately, you know, I try not to focus on the negative. I think we do a pretty good job, or at least I try to do a pretty good job of focusing on the positive on most of our shows. You know, I do think there's been a little bit of a defensive regression. It feels like teams are at least a little bit more willing to kind of go at Al. And, you know, but, you know, on the same token, every time I start thinking that, playoff Al's a different beast and he kind of goes up. I don't know what I don't have it in front of me with the total minutes that Al is playing right now. I suspect it's under 30.
Except for on any given night, it could be quite high.
Right. But I'm just wondering for the average of the whole season. And the fact that he's getting the second nights of back-to-back is, you know, is enough for me to think, like, even if he plays 34 in a game or 38 in a game, as much as I don't love that number for a 36 or 37 year old guy, you know, he's fine. And, like, so because he's getting his rest in spots, I'm fine with whatever they need to lean on Al in these instances. I mean, I'm almost tempted to say I could take even a touch more Al right now while your big situation, especially while Rob is out, if needed.
Not to sound like a broken record, but I mean, I also pretty much agree. And he's going to be taking the back-to-backs off what few are left. I think it was Eddie House, your coworker, who said that he is gearing up the playoffs now, and it looks like it, right? So I don't want to suggest anything that would change that. He knows his body, obviously, very well at this point. So if he's comfortable, I am for it.
Yeah, again, I think he's the North Star right now. Smart, if he's going to play point guard, needs to be the stabilizing force, and I think he's still figuring that out a little bit. So I think down the stretch, I don't really care if the Celtics go nuts, but or if they like pack it up and just get ready for the postseason. But I think Horford needs to be out there when it matters. So whatever that looks like, please prioritize that. Okay, Justin is screaming in our chat. Time Lord.
I love it.
Chris, what do you think of Robert Williams' appetite for minutes right now?
Yeah, so obviously, and I would love to keep it as about how many minutes he's playing when he is on the court, I just need as much Time Lord as I can get. I think maybe one of the biggest storylines has been there have just been long stretches of the season where he hasn't looked himself. And some of that's understandable. He's coming back from a second knee surgery. You know, he's gotten dinged up a couple of times. What was it, the ankle at one point, and now the hamstring. So I would like to, you know, I have to go to the other extreme now and say probably the most important thing for the Celtics is to make sure that Rob is somewhere close to what he can be in the playoffs. And so if you have to tread cautiously over the final 16 games, and I'd rather they pick their spots there than like irrationally try and just think like, oh, these guys need minutes to figure out how to play. No, they know how to play together. Like last year just showed they'll figure it out. It's been disappointing that they haven't as quickly in this new era kind of tapped into that. But I still believe like as much of anything that can figure itself out in the postseason. And, you know, so I would say, as much as I want to see Rob out there as much as possible, you know, the fewer minutes that you can ensure, whatever the right number is that the sports science people tell Joe Mazzulla to get him upright in the playoffs, then so be it.
I was really looking for some scintillating podcasting where we disagree, but yet again, I can't say too much. I will say the incredibly controversial thing that I think that at least for the immediate future, he should be coming off the bench. Derek White should be starting and closing games. I think he helps get them off to a good start. I think that he has shown himself, at least for now, been a better force for a closing type of environment. I think he makes better decisions. I think he gets other players involved more. And I think that, as you said, keeping Rob fresh for the postseason is the most important thing. They're going to need to see what the best five lineup is. It may not be the same best five lineup it was under Ime Udoka. So we should, you know, temper our expectations, give him a little bit of time to tinker while Rob is out to see how Derek can fit into this lineup with him in it in the future as he comes back. So I don't disagree at all. I just think that some people might look at this as a demotion, and I don't think that it will be. I think it's actually for the same reason he makes less money. You want to make sure you preserve him because you don't want the reason why they paid him so little, because they're worried that he could become. And, you know, there's even hints. We've seen that he's not, you know, quite as bouncy as he was. Is this because he isn't conditioned? Is he because he's being cautious? Could be a combination of all these things. I don't know, but we're going to find out.
Yeah, again, it's also unpopular, especially with Forsberg on the pod, but I also would take him off the bench. I think if Mazzulla Ball, we're forging ahead with that, going five wide matters. And I think preserving Time Lord's precious conditioning matters. And then I don't think there's enough time left in the schedule for this to come out, but a Brogdon Time Lord pick and roll. I mean, if there's not going to be pick and roll among the starting five, having that off the bench just as a different look and kind of a stabilizing force for the defense is interesting to me. I don't think they have enough time to kind of showcase that, but in my heart of hearts, I do wonder.
And it's weird for me to sit here and be okay with the idea of Rob not being a starter. And yet, I mean, as someone who falls back on the data, it's undeniable. Like the starting line at the start of the year had more sizzle because when they have more space right now, they've thrived. And it was like, you could tell there was some reintegration process with Rob and learning to play that way again. So maybe it'll be matchup dependent. If you get the Cavs in round two, do you go double big? And, you know, maybe you lean on size more in that instance. But I also can't sit here and say that more Derek White minutes overall is a bad thing, especially when it's been flabbergasting that he hasn't played as much as he probably should in crunch time and overtime situations.
Which is a good segue. I've spent this entire time not really sure how to ask this question because we haven't talked about Smart's minutes, but we flirted with maybe they should be less or not even starters minutes at times. We have hinted that Derek White needs more minutes. We haven't really talked about Brogdon or Grant, but presumably they all need to see the floor and good chunk. So let me try to ask it this way, Chris. Who is your preferred fifth starter? Who's your preferred first guy off the bench? And then what do you do with the other two guys? And since I gave you a weird question, I'll let you think a little bit longer and try to answer it myself. Again, I think politically smart needs to start. I think for the culture, that matters. But goodness, I think Derek has really earned a second and third and fourth look. I suspect Derek is a consummate pro and he understands and he could come off the bench as the 10th guy and be just as good, but that might be me profiling a former Spurs player, so I don't really know. It's going to be really tough. I hope Joe has their ear because some nights Brogdon might be the guy who needs to close games because they need the shooting and the poise. Sometimes it's got to be Derek because they need the length. And then in my heart and soul, I hope it's Marcus because you know what? They give him three corner threes at the end of that Cleveland game. And the Cleveland game and he hit one of them, which is the Marcus Smart experience, I suppose. So there's my non-answer, but hopefully Chris, I stalled long enough. What do you do with this quartet?
It's so funny. I think, and I'm one of those guys who doesn't love the idea of being matchup dependent, but if you can get away with going and having both Derek and Marcus in the starting lineup and treading cautiously with Rob in round one, like I'm not opposed to that. And I think Derek has earned the right to be on the floor as much as possible. Now, if it comes down to like, which guard am I playing? I'm with you. Like, I don't even think it's political. I think like Marcus was really good at the start of the year. Like as he really tapped into the same thing that we saw for a good chunk of last season and throughout his career, where when he focuses on just playmaking and defense, he's awesome. And when he steps outside of that, that's when you need to be ready with the sort of, okay, it's a Malcolm night, it's a Derek night, whatever, you know, and you got to trade cautiously with that. It's weird though at the end of games, because when Smart was out in that stretch, I kept saying, you know, Celtics really miss Marcus Smart. And for every three-pointer that he launches that makes you want to launch the remote through the TV, he does something crazy. And like that, if he had tipped that play in last night when Grant missed that second free throw, like the internet would have broke because we all would have been insufferable. And it's Marcus Smart winning plays, all the stuff he does. And yet, the way the night went for the Celtics, it was the complete opposite. And Smart had 13 bad shots probably in that game where he just kind of launched. And so I hope Marcus can dial in, and then that makes the discussion a little easier. I hope one thing over the final games, if Rob isn't going to play a whole lot, I would like to see them just kind of experiment more with three guards. I don't know how much they've done it this year. It felt jarring when it happened the other night. Like, okay, I don't feel like I've seen this a whole lot, and it was sort of a moment. And I don't even know what the data says. And I'm kind of going to go punch around when you guys are talking, but like figure it out. Like the ultimate key is to have your best players on the court and to have the versatility to match up with whatever you think is going to create the best opportunity. And maybe there's nights where that's it. And credit, but the bigger picture too, to what you said, is credit to Derek, who has never once griped about the fact that he had played a third of the crunch time minutes of this season, which is just absurd. And credit to Malcolm for, you know, when he got here, he kept saying like, yeah, I'm going to embrace that six man run. I'm like, yeah, that's easy to say. And then you get into the season and you're like, this sucks. I want to play a ton of minutes and I'm good. I'm better than these guys. Let me play. And to his credit, even as they've gone out of their way to keep him in that six man role, he's been, you know, perfectly content with it. So as long as they're happy, then Joe hopefully can pick and choose as he wants.
I don't have too much to add to that. I do think that it's fair to point out that the bad version of Missoula Ball kind of just cuts Marcus out of the picture. He's just kind of standing around while other people bring the ball up the court, and then he just, you know, launches it when he finally does get a chance to touch it. I think that there were some concerns about how Malcolm Brogdon was being used that were fair earlier in the season. I feel like Joe has really managed to get those minutes down and uses him well at this point. As to the whole, you know, Derek starting next to Smart, I think also that is an interesting possibility. I don't see any reason why it won't work against most matchups. And the only other thing that I would add to any of this is they really need to give some parts of the bench, particularly Sam Hauser a little bit more burn than he's been getting, just because of the fact that if they don't know what they have very, very soon, they're not going to have any chance to figure it out, and they just won't really be available.
And I'm just going to I'm gonna bomb in real quick because I looked it up. So 109 minutes with three guards and, of course, minus 1.83 rating. So, I don't know what you can pull from 100 minutes, although, you know, we make big assumptions about this starting five in less than that. Offensive rating is awesome, 123.8, but they've given up a ton of points with three guards, which makes me wonder if just teams were exploiting the size out there, despite those guys all being good defenders. And of course, I'm looking at the combinations, and it's like Smart and White together plus 10.76, even with Brogdon off the court. Derek White is just plus 14 overall, like, and being without the other two guards out there. So the common thread, at least on looking at the quick matrix, is just Derek White does good things. Play Derek White as much as possible.
So while we're on the subject of guards playing well, let's transition to our last segment really, really quick, because we wanted to ask you, Chris, about Jaylen Brown, his all NBA case. And Jaylen's been playing great. He deservedly made an all-star team. It has huge cap implications, which, yeah, Justin, you just wrote about for Celtics Wire. I'm sure a lot of people have written about it too.
Let me just correct that, because I wrote about what Yossi, friend of the pod, wrote about, Yossi Goslin, yeah, of Hoops Hype. But I digress. Continue.
No, sure. If ever I say anything smart about capology, it's because I ask Yossi about it. So, Chris, Jaylen perhaps is in line to make one of these six All-NBA guard positions. But let me read you a list of guards. And part of why this is such a good transition is many of these guards play in the East, and that's going to be, you know, problematic for the Celtics in the postseason as well. But if Jaylen is going to make an All-NBA team, he's got to join five of these guys: DeMar DeRozan, Doncic, Anthony Edwards, which is just fun to say out loud, De'Aaron Fox, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Tyrese Halliburton, Drew Holiday, who has been playing like a beast and gives me great pause for the postseason, Kyrie Irving, Damian Lillard, Donovan Mitchell, also a beast, also scary in the postseason, Ja Morant, and Justin, we don't have it on our list, but I'm going to add James Harden, sure, who has been going nuts and also makes a Swiss cheese defense in the backcourt a little scary for Boston. Anyways, Chris, where are you at with Jaylen Brown's all NBA candidacy? It's so funny,
because I'm guilty of talking about it a lot, and then you kind of sit down like you did and do the exercise, and it gets a little bit tougher to see where it is, especially because, I mean, Jaylen's interesting because he fits into that sort of guard forward role, and, you know, so obsessed with the positions on these all NBA teams and the whole center thing. And so, you know, because the centers get spread out instead of just putting one out as a forward, it probably compromises space on these teams. So I don't know what the right answer is here. All I know is it's, you know, he's fighting for one of the last spots. He certainly deserves to be in that conversation. I think one of the things that will conspire against them is that, you know, games like that last night, no Tatum, and it's just, they still struggle to win. As good as Jaylen can be, sometimes it feels like even when he has his bigger night, that the team still isn't as easy to win as if Tatum has a big night. Not, you know, there's so much variance in that it's, yeah, I'm not going to get too worked up about it, but I do think it matters. It'd be a lot easier to be like, oh, every time Jaylen Brown scores 35 points, Celtics win. Now, every time Tatum and Brown score 30 points, they win, except for that one Cleveland game. So, you know, you can certainly make a case, but I do think it's going to be close. It's interesting. I hadn't thought about the whole Ja Morant situation, and like, if that's snowballs, does that create a little more opportunity for Jaylen? But just because of the magnitude of what it means to this team, I really hope Jaylen finishes strong and gives voters a reminder. And that's part of the reason that, like, it kind of sucks, you know, and not sucks because I'm supposed to be an impartial journalist, but if you're thinking about, like, Celtics being in the mix for all these different awards, and, you know, I think we just all thought Joe was going to cruise to the Coach of the Year, and, you know, Brogdon would be Sixth Man of the Year. And pretty much all of those have been thrown in the flux with this little baby slump, because now Quickly's in the Sixth Man of the Year conversation. We start looking at what the Kings are doing. And, you know, I felt like the Celtics had to finish first in the East for a lot of these things to sort of be in play. And so I'll be interested to see exactly where Boston finishes. And if just, you know, again, does this little rough patch force voters who are irrationally tied to recency bias to just think a little too hard about who deserves to be in these spots?
Yeah, what's tough for Boston is, you're so right, all of this is so narrative based, and there's just enough time for Boston to rewrite the script and for Jalen to showcase his stuff and yada, yada, yada. After Wednesday, Boston's going to go on their longest road trip of the season, tied for the longest road trip of the season. So if they're going to write the ship and rewrite the narrative, they have to do it on the road, which, hey, if they can cut the mustard, then they can do it on the road, but we will see. Dr. Quinn, given that list and given that commentary, where are you at with Jalen's All-NBA candidacy?
I'm probably a little more comfortable than you guys that he'll make it. I'm keeping an eye on some of these narratives. I hadn't thought about the Ja narrative. That could be huge for Jalen in the long run. And really huge for us Celtics fans, because we didn't quite mention this, but basically the idea is that if he can get this All-NBA nomination, he will be eligible for the Supermax, which will not make Wick Grosbeck particularly happy from a financial perspective, but probably very happy from a fan perspective, because no one would be able to touch that offer. Even if there was another team out there that was, you know, competing for titles right now that could sign him, which is a pretty dubious prospect given the way the cap works, they're not going to be able to give him that much money. So this is the reason why we're all hoping for this.
And he just has to make a All-NBA team. It's not the first. Yeah.
Right.
So I guess to be a little bit of a rain cloud, I think that Luka is a lock. I think that Donovan Mitchell is a lock. I think Drew is a lock. And I think Dame Lillard is a lock. So, ooh, okay. There's a little pushback for the YouTube crowd. You saw it. A pushback on the Dame one. Okay, so I guess we could put a pin in it and say that we don't have enough data yet, because there's just enough of the season to be played out. But it's going to be tight. And certainly if Jalen, you know, is on the outside looking in, it's nothing he did. It's that there's a lot of talented guards in the NBA right now.
Yeah. And that was more my grimace is like, when you go through and do the exercise, it's like, oh yeah, there's just a ton of talented players out there. And it gets hard as we start we're just trying to shoehorn guys in. We're like, well, what does it matter about position? You know, like, let's just get this guy on an All-NBA team. And that's going to be the hard part, is just when voters sit down to sort of digest it all, I hope they sort of look at the totality and really the strides. Like, you know, I know this isn't most improved, but when you look at how far Jalen's scoring has come and what he's done, but hey, it's also on Jalen to tighten up some of the things down the stretch of the season. Both him and Tatum got to be better with the basketball, keep the playmaking improving. And so if they want those awards and to be in those conversations, and more so Jalen, obviously, because of the ramifications, but finish strong.
Yeah, that's a good pep talk. I mean, Ant Edwards, De'Aaron Fox, Shea, and Haliburton making an All-NBA team. It's like, dang, the NBA is so talented.
But really, it's crazy.
So are the Boston Celtics, and hopefully they finish strong, and maybe they won't. Who's to say? Mr. Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston, thank you for once again coming on the Celtics Lab podcast, and will I see you Wednesday?
I am not sure. And every night's a new adventure when I'm trying to figure out where I will be stationed. If you don't, I will be down in Atlanta and then Houston. And so I will see this. I will actually get to see this team up close a little bit more than I have when I'm in the studio.
All right. Well, maybe I'll see you on Wednesday. And if not,
there we go.
Enjoy the road. I will be here teaching. but if not, once again, thanks for stopping by, Dr. Quinn. Pleasure as always. And like and subscribe to this podcast if you enjoyed what you heard. Adios.